ghoulies writhing around his couch. I wouldn't have liked it much, but I would have preferred it to what I was seeing now. What could they possibly be talking about? Brad nodded, several times in a row, like a puppet having a string pulled. Then he fumbled around in his jacket pocket, pulling out his cigarettes. The woman stood, stretched, her shirt lifting to reveal a sliver of pale stomach, then walked toward the kitchen. It took all my will, but I kept looking through the slats, praying she wouldn't glance in my direction. I wanted to get a better look at her. She swung open the door of the refrigerator, bent at the waist to peer inside, and I was able to stare at her profile. She really did look a lot like Lily Kintner. The same gamine body, pale complexion, red hair. But the clothes were wrong. The woman pulled a water bottle from the fridge, uncapped it. Before she went back to the living room, she swung her head, her eyes scanning the spotless countertops of the kitchen. I got a better look at her, the kitchen's overhead fluorescent reflecting off her eyes, an unworldly green that seemed to glow for a moment. I dropped down off the tips of my toes. It was Lily Kintner. I'd seen her eyes, and now I was sure. Without hesitation, I quickly walked back to my car, swinging wide of the front of the house so I wouldn't activate the motion sensor light again. I slid back into my Mini. It was Lily. I was sure of it. But how was that possible? How had she possibly become involved with Brad? And it wasn't just Brad, obviously. Ted's trip to Winslow had clearly been to see her. So she must have been involved with Ted. Were they having an affair? Had she initiated it after some long gestating need for revenge? But more importantly, at this moment, how had she found Brad, and what did she want from him? I slid farther down in my seat to wait. My mind reeled. The rain had stopped, but the sky was still blanketed by clouds, and I felt protected in the black shadow of the tree I was under. I watched Brad's cottage, wondering if Lily would spend the night there, but knowing I needed to wait it out in case she didn't. My mind was filled with a swarm of possibilities, but in all of them, I was being hunted. Somehow, Lily was hunting me. It felt like 2 hours, but it was probably only one when Brad's front door opened and Lily emerged. The outside light flicked on, and I watched her get into her car. She backed out of the driveway and turned south on Micmac Road. Part of me wanted to follow her, to see where she went. But it was more important that I talk with Brad and find out what was possibly going on. I forced myself to wait for 5 minutes, just in case Lily realized she'd forgotten something and turned around. Then I bolted across the road and rapped on Brad's door. He cracked the door and looked out at me, his puffy eyes confused for a moment. I pulled the hood off my head. "It's me, Brad. Let me in." "Shit," he said, and opened the door for me. I took a step inside and pushed the door closed behind me. I could smell cheap perfume. "What the fuck was Lily Kintner doing at your house?" I said.
"Is that her name?"
"Jesus, Brad, what did she want?"
"I just met her tonight. She was at Cooley's. She came up to me in the parking lot."
His eyes were shifting, as though he were trying to figure out exactly what to say to me. I resisted the urge to punch him as hard as I could in the throat. "Brad, what the fuck did she want from you?" He slumped a little, looking like a dog that has just been swatted in the nose, and said,
"She wants to kill you, Miranda. She wants me to set it up. She told me it's the only way I won't end up in prison. I was going to tell you. I promise."
Chapter 24 Lily. I arrived in Kennewick at 8 p.m. on Tuesday, 24 hours after making the plan with Brad. Without traffic, the drive from Massachusetts was just over an hour. I parked my car at the Admiral's Inn, a brand-new resort hotel shoehorned onto a bluff on the other side of the beach in Kennewick Harbor. The parking lot wasn't full, but it wasn't empty, either. I had circled and parked so that I was facing the short sliver of beach, and beyond it, the soft lights of the Kennewick Inn. I sat in my car for a moment. It was a cloudless night, the black sky pocked with yellow stars. A three-quarters moon reflected on the ocean. I'd brought a small penlight so I could navigate along the cliff walk to Ted and Miranda's house, but I didn't think I'd need it. Earlier, after making myself a simple cheese omelet for dinner, I'd called my boss at his home and told him that I still had a sore throat and that it might be getting worse. "Don't come in tomorrow. Stay home. Get better," he said, rising panic in his voice. "Well, I'll definitely stay home tomorrow."
"Yes, you should. Take the week if you need it."
After the call, I went over the details of my plan. It was risky. It all hinged on whether Brad was able to set it up the way I'd asked him to, and I hated relying on someone else. I'd never done that before, and I wouldn't have done it this time except that I needed to act fast. The detective I'd met the day before, Henry Kimball, was probably closing in on Brad and Miranda. Or maybe just Brad, fast, and I wanted to get there first. I sat for a moment in the car. I was in my darkest clothes, black jeans and a black turtleneck sweater that I wore over several layers, since the temperature was supposed to dip into the 30s. I wore my hiking shoes with the good soles and a dark green winter hat in wool, pom-pom cut off, my braided hair tucked under it. I had a small gray backpack designed for day hikes, and I filled it with a pair of gloves, my stun gun, the pen light, a thermos with hot coffee, a flask filled with apricot brandy, the fish fillet knife with a leather sheath, a Leatherman multi-tool, and a handful of plastic bags. When I stepped out of the car, it was colder than I thought it would be, a steady, brisk breeze coming off the ocean, and I wished that I had brought a windbreaker. I put the penlight in my back jeans pocket, pulled the backpack over both shoulders, locked the car behind me, and walked down off the bluff toward the start of the cliff walk. I walked as casually as possible, in case I was being watched, imagining myself as the type of person who always strolled along the shore on moonlit nights. As far as I could tell, there was no one to see me, however, and I reached the cliff walk, unobserved. I had plenty of time, and walked slowly, only turning on the penlight once when the footpath passed below an alcove of twisted trees. As stunning as the walk had been 2 days earlier on that blustery afternoon, it was more beautiful now. The vistas of the ocean were silver beneath the high white moon. I felt as though I'd stepped into a black-and-white movie from the 1930s. The ocean and the sky, some fantasy projection of a perfect, glittering evening. Romantic and moody at the same time. I kept moving, all my senses prickling, as though I were a small animal that had emerged from its burrow into a giant world. Something rustled in a bayberry bush, and I paused, waiting to see if it was another animal like me, or just the pulsing wind from the ocean. I heard nothing else, and kept moving. When I reached the end of the path, I crouched and looked at the looming house. In moonlight, it looked finished, its three-gabled roof outlined against the sky. The stretch of land between the ocean and the back of the house, which in daylight looked like chewed-up dirt, was transformed by moonlight, resembling the sloping magisterial lawn it was destined to become. I looked behind me at the sky. A scrap of cloud was moving quickly, about to pass in front of the moon. I watched it progress, and when it blanked out the moon and the world turned temporarily darker, I took a deep breath and crossed the property toward the house, making sure to skirt the half-dug hole where the swimming pool was supposed to go. I took the two wide steps up to the finished patio, crouched again, and removed the backpack from my back and unzipped it. I took out the stun gun and the knife, my pair of leather gloves, and two plastic bags, then re-zipped the backpack and stood back up, putting the knife in one front jeans pocket and the stun gun in the other. I pulled the plastic bags on over my hiking shoes, tucking the ends down into my wool socks. Then put on my gloves and tested the sliding glass doors that Brad said would be unlocked. They were, and I entered the pitch-black house. I pulled the doors closed behind me and just stood for a moment, listening intently and letting my eyes adjust to the blackness. It took a while, but they eventually did, the interior of the house becoming gray and fuzzy. I could make out the finished floors, piled here and there with stacked tiles, or large unopened boxes of sheetrock. I moved forward into the foyer toward the front of the house, the plastic bags whispering along the floor. Something batted at my head, and I jerked involuntarily, looking up at a pair of dangling wires where a light fixture would go. I walked toward the south-facing kitchen, its wide windows helping me to navigate, hoping that one of the windows would look out onto the front driveway. There wasn't one, so I turned back, moving in what felt like slow motion through the grainy light. The air in the house was as cold as it was outside, and smelled of sawdust and glue. I found the front door, twice the height of any normal human, and peered through one of its side windows. All I could see was the large dumpster, something fluttering from its edge in the breeze, but no car yet. The window stretched from the floor to the ceiling, so I sat cross-legged and waited. I was an hour early. I told myself several times during that hour that I could simply get up and leave, retrace my steps along the cliff walk, get back into my car, and drive back home to Winslow. I had done nothing illegal yet, done nothing that would implicate me in any crime. I was untouchable. But I also told myself that if I did that, if I got up and walked away, I would be living in a world in which Miranda Hobart was allowed to get away with murder. Ted was dead. Eric Washburn was dead. And both might still be alive if it hadn't been for Miranda. I heard Brad's truck before I saw it. He'd turned his headlights off, but the large pickup was crunching along the gravel driveway. He parked between the dumpster and the house. It was still bright outside under the cloudless sky, and I could see Brad in the driver's seat and Miranda on the passenger side. They were a little early by my watch, and Miranda stayed in the truck for about a minute. I wondered what they were talking about. When she opened the door, the truck's interior light popped on, and I watched Brad, an unlit cigarette in his lips, quickly put his hand over the light while Miranda swung down out of the truck onto the driveway. She walked toward the house in that hip-swinging way I remembered, her hair tucked under what looked like a newsboy cap. As she neared the door, I stood and took a step backward into the deeper darkness of the house. My heart thudded a little faster in my chest, but I also felt an electric charge running over my skin. I listened to a key being inserted, the lock snapping open. The door swung inward, Miranda taking a half step into the house, then pausing. The wind outside had picked up. I knew that she was letting her eyes adjust to the darkness as I had, and that, for the moment, she couldn't see me. Her face was gray in the light, her eyes opened wide in an attempt to see, and her lips slightly parted. I looked at her hand on the doorknob. She also wore gloves. "In here," I said. She turned, and I turned on the penlight, pointing its beam at the floor so she could see where I was standing. As soon as she located me, I flicked it off. "Lily," she said. "Come in. Your eyes will adjust." She shut the door behind her. "Isn't this dramatic?" she said, and Faith, the college girl, came flooding back to me. Sarcastic, slightly loaded, talking to me in the dim lights of some St. Dunn's party, a drink in one hand and a cigarette in the other. "Did Brad tell you what I wanted?" I asked. She took a step forward. She wore a three-quarter-length coat, and her right hand was in its large pocket. I instinctively touched the stun gun, which was in my front pocket, its end protruding. "He did," Miranda said, stopping about a yard in front of me. I wanted to move backward a little bit, but I didn't want her to hear the rustle of the plastic bags on my feet. I was surprised.
"Surprised by what?"
"Well, surprised by everything. Surprised you're here. Surprised you knew Ted. But mostly surprised that you want money from me. It just doesn't seem like you. Does it have something to do with your father?"
"What do you mean?" I said.
"He killed someone, right? In England, he must have legal fees."
"No, the money is for me."
"Fine, it doesn't matter to me," she said. "You know that I can't get you money right away. The estate has to be settled. These things take a lot of time."
"I know. I just wanted to meet here tonight so I could hear from you directly. After this, things can go through Brad."
"Can I ask you, were you sleeping with Ted? How did that happen? How did you two even meet?"
"We were on a flight together.
He knew everything about you, you know? He knew you were cheating on him with Brad. You didn't fool him." In the fuzzy light, I watched Miranda shrug. She was close enough so that I could smell her. Tobacco. Expensive lotion.
"So why didn't you just turn me in?" Miranda said. "If you're so sure I'm this awful person."
"I will turn you in, Faith, if you don't do everything I say."
"Is this really about Eric?" she asked. I heard a door rattle somewhere in the house, the wind outside picking up.
"No," I said, "it isn't. This is all about you."
Miranda turned first. Brad had emerged from the darkness to stand between us, a long, heavy-looking wrench in his right hand. He must have come in through the patio doors and had moved so quietly in the house that I wondered briefly if he'd taken his shoes off. His face in the half-light was twisted, his jaw working back and forth as though something was stuck in his throat. He was looking at me. I watched him lift the heavy wrench above his head and start to bring it down.
Chapter 25. Miranda. It took 2 hours and a pot of coffee laced with whiskey, but Brad had told me everything. He told me how he'd spotted the sheriff's car in front of his place early in the evening. He'd panicked, driving straight by his cottages, then heading out to his dad's fishing cabin in Lebanon. He'd nearly decided to stay the night there, but then began to think that it would look strange, like something a guilty man would do. He'd driven back to Kennewick, going straight to Cooley's instead of going home, and that's where he'd found Lily Kintner waiting for him in Cooley's parking lot. They'd talked in his truck. She'd told him that she knew all about the murder. She knew that Brad and I were having an affair and that we'd planned on killing Ted together. She knew that Brad had driven down to Boston, had broken into a neighbor's house first to make the murder look like a burglary gone wrong, then knocked on Brad's door, asked to be let in, and shot him. "How'd she know all this?" I asked. "I didn't ask, Miranda. She just knew. She knew everything." Brad's voice had risen an octave, and his hand was shaky as he drank from his coffee cup. "Shh, it's gonna be okay. I'm here now. I know. I was going to call you first thing in the morning, let you know all about it." "Baby, I know you were. But it's good I drove over tonight. It will give us more time to figure out what to do about her. What does she want? Brad hesitated.
I'm supposed to tell you she wants money.
What the fuck does that mean, you're supposed to tell me? Just listen. I'm telling you everything.
I'm supposed to tell you she wants money from you. $1 million a year to keep quiet. And that she wants to meet with you tomorrow night at the house on Micmac. She wants to hear from you that you agree.
Tomorrow night?
Yeah, at 10. I drive you over, and you two meet in the house, one-on-one.
Jesus.
No, Miranda, you're not listening to me. This is only what I'm supposed to tell you. She wants to kill you. She's planning on killing you. That's what she told me.
How? I asked. It was the first question that popped into my mind.
She has a stun gun, and then she said she was going to strangle you.
Brad swiped at his nose with the back of his hand.
I don't understand why she told all this to you. She hates you. She said she's known you since college and you're an evil person.
Wow. Jesus, I said.
You look happy about this.
Do I?
No, I'm freaked out.
I was freaked out, but I had another feeling I couldn't quite define. It was like being in high school and finding out that the cutest boy in class had been talking about you to his friends. I'd gotten under Lily's skin, and I hadn't even known it. How did she think she was going to get away with it?
How did she think you were going to get away with it?
They already suspect you. There was a fucking witness down in Boston. Someone saw you, Brad, going into my house. That's why the sheriff was at your house tonight. You're going to be questioned.
What are you talking about?
Spittle flew from his lips, some of it striking me in the face. Relax. It's no big deal, I lied. You have an alibi, remember? But that's why I drove up here in the first place. You're going to be interviewed by the police. I don't know when, but it's going to happen. You just need to remember everything we talked about. Stick to the story, and everything's going to be fine.
But now this other person knows.
I know. Give me a moment to think. I took two deep breaths, still trying to wrap my head around the fact that Lily knew everything, that Lily wanted to kill me. Did Lily say how she knew Ted?
No, I thought you'd know. But she knew everything about what had happened.
How does she think she'll get away with it? Get away with killing me?
She said she's going to hide your body and your car, and that it will look like you skipped town. She said that it's the only way I won't get caught by the police. I'm supposed to drive you to the meeting tomorrow night, and then I'm supposed to help her get your body back to your car. She's got it all figured out.
And what? You told her you'd be happy to do this for her?
I was having a goddamn heart attack, Miranda. She knows everything. I told her I'd think about it. I'm supposed to call her phone from Cooley's tomorrow if it gets set up. Just let it ring a couple of times so it shows up on her caller ID. Obviously, I was going to tell you all about it, but I went along with her. What else could I do?
No, you were right. You did the right thing. I'm proud of you. Let me think for a moment. Brad tugged at a sideburn.
I know what we need to do, he said. I know what I need to do.
What?
I'll kill her, Miranda. It will be easy. She's sneaking up here to see you. No one knows she's involved in this. She told me. I'll take you to the house. You go in the front door, and I'll go around and come in the back. Keep talking to her, and I'll sneak up and hit her with something. I can bury her in the yard.
You do that for me? I said.
I killed your husband for you, Miranda. I love you. Of course I'd kill this bitch.
It made perfect sense. I knew that it was the only way out. If Lily knew everything, then she needed to die. But it worried me. Won't she expect that? I said, speaking my thoughts aloud. It's so risky for her to come up here to meet with me.
She's not coming up to meet with you. She's coming up here to kill you. She told me that.
That's what I mean. How could she be so sure that she could convince you to do this for her? She just met you. She did just meet you, right? Look, she was convincing. She told me it was my only way out, that you were going to throw me under the bus, that when the police came, it was going to be my word against yours, and there wasn't going to be any proof that you conspired to murder your husband. You could say that I was deranged, that I became obsessed with you. No one besides me could say otherwise. This was, of course, my plan if Brad was arrested for killing my husband. I would say that we'd gotten physical once, in a moment of weakness for me, but that there had never been any talk about killing Ted. Now that I think of it, I did mention to Brad Daggett that I was going down to Florida for a long weekend. He must have thought I was telling him because I wanted... Oh, my God. They might suspect me, but there was no way they could convict me. And you believed all this shit she told you? I said to Brad, a look of disgust on my face. No, I don't. I believe you, but I told her that I'd help her out. I pretended to believe her. We're in trouble, Miranda. She knows everything. Okay. I'll meet her at the house, and you'll kill her. It will all work out. It needs to be done. We talked some more that night, but Brad was drunk and starting to not make sense, and he needed to sleep. I was paying the price for enlisting a gutless alcoholic to help me kill my husband. Before I left, about an hour before dawn, I told him that he should disappear the following day, take a drive up the coast, and not answer his phone. You're not in any condition yet to be questioned by the police, I said. I know, he said. This is going to turn out fine. They might suspect us, but they won't catch us. We knew this all along. I know. If you wanted to, baby, you could leave after tomorrow night. Skip town. Skip the country. Go down to the islands, and I'll come and find you when this is all over. They'd know it was me. They would, but they wouldn't be able to find you. I could give you money to run with, and I'd meet you later. Bring more money. You'd be free.
What about my kids?
He said, his voice cracking. He raised his big fat head toward me, and I saw that his eyes were genuinely wet. We'd never talked about his kids, not even once. Shh, I said. Let's not talk about it now. You need to get somewhere and sleep, and we can talk about this tomorrow night. Remember, stay away from your house and off your phone. Drive somewhere in your truck and sleep there, okay? Just in case the cops come early in the morning. I'll meet you in Portsmouth. Outside that restaurant that Ted and you and I went to way back when. Okay? At 9 at night. I arrived back in Boston just as the rising sun was beginning to edge the city roofs in a thin, cold light. I entered my house, taking Tuesday's newspaper in with me, and made a pot of coffee. While it brewed, I showered and changed. I would try and nap later in the day, but knew that I wouldn't be able to sleep right now. I was in a shitstorm. The police hadn't bought the burglary angle, and they were closing in on Brad. And now this craziness with Lily. I couldn't even wrap my head around it. There had always been something freakish about Lily Kintner. She was watchful. I remembered that. I'd met her when she was probably 18. But she seemed much older at the time, composed and sure of herself, and definitely not like other freshman girls. Had she known that I'd stolen Eric from her that one summer before he died? I hadn't stolen him, not really, but we were sharing him without Lily's consent. Had she found out and been stalking me ever since, waiting for an opportunity to kill me? If Eric were still here, I thought, and suddenly I went back to that half-formed thought. Had she killed Eric in London? He died of an allergy attack. But she could have been the one to give him the nuts, knowing he couldn't get to his medicine. It was crazy, but it was also possible. I tried to remember back to what I'd heard around that time. All my friends in New York had been talking about it. He was drunk and went out for Indian food, and the chicken dish he got had nuts in it, and he died. Something like that. One thing I remembered for sure was that Lily had been right there with him, probably watching him die. Had she kept his medicine away from him? It now seemed entirely possible that she had. The day passed in slow chunks of time. I kept changing my mind about what to do that night. I wanted Lily dead, but what worried me was being present at the scene of a crime. I'd been so careful to make sure that I would never be convicted for Ted's murder, that there would be no evidence connecting me to any crime. Picturing the night ahead, I felt like I was walking into a trap. I was walking into a trap. Brad had told me that much. But even knowing what Lily had in mind, I felt unsettled, unsure of myself for the first time in a long time. But I also knew, without a doubt, that if Lily somehow knew everything she said she knew, she needed to be eliminated. With Lily gone, I'd be able to breathe a little easier, and then I could focus on dealing with Brad. My phone was charging on my bedside table. I went and lay down, scrolling through the missed calls and listening to the voicemails. One of the messages was from Detective Kimball, letting me know that the coroner was done with Ted's body, and I could alert the funeral home that they could pick him up at their convenience. He also asked if I knew of a good way to get in touch with Brad Daggett. Hearing that was a relief. Brad was doing what I'd told him to do and disappearing for a while. I thought of calling the funeral home, but decided against it. Instead, I sent text messages to a couple of friends, letting them know that I was okay, just lying low. I called my mother, and we spoke briefly. I told her I was overwhelmed by all the little chores associated with a husband's death. "Tell me about it, sweetheart," she said. "Divorce is no picnic either. All that paperwork." I tried to sleep, falling into a doze as thin as tissue paper, but thoughts of Lily kept rippling up at me. I tried to remember what she looked like, and all I could see was her slender, hipless frame, her shiny red hair, her unsettling stillness. When I tried to picture her face, I could get a general sense of it, but I couldn't picture any specific features. What did her nose look like? Her mouth? Every time I thought I had it, it flew away from me, like a butterfly I couldn't quite net. I realized I was chewing at the edge of my thumb and made myself stop before I drew blood. I was wearing yoga pants, and I touched myself through them, thinking of a featureless man, someone rich, in Italy, a married neighbor who came over to my lakeside villa to fuck me. It started to work, and I shucked the yoga pants halfway down my thighs. But before I could come, I started to think of Ted. How on the first night in this house, on this bed, he had sprinkled rose petals, and had laid out an expensive negligee for me, and how much it had turned me off. I parked my car in the back alley behind the restaurant in Portsmouth where Brad and I had agreed to meet. It had turned cold, and I wore a long coat and a cap with my hair tucked up under it. One of the street lamps in front of the restaurant was busted, and I stood under it, watching for Brad's truck. It was a bright night, though, and I still felt exposed. Brad showed up exactly at the time we had planned, and I hoisted myself up into the passenger seat, hoping that he was relatively sober. "We still doing this?" I asked as he pulled away from the curb.
"Fuck yeah,"
he said, and I recognized from his overly loud intonation that he was at least partly loaded, but not wrecked. Tell me again what we're going to do.
On Micmac Road, I'll turn off my lights and drive up to the house. You get out and go in the front door using the key. I'll go around to the back of the house and come in through the patio doors. Then I'll walk up to both of you and hit her on the head with a wrench.
Why don't you just shoot her?
I don't have that gun anymore. You knew that.
Right, I forgot. Then what?
I left plastic wrap in the house. You help me roll her up. She goes in the truck and I take you back to your car. I can get rid of her body.
Tell me again why I need to be there. Brad turned his head slowly toward me. We were heading north on Route 1, and the lights of an oncoming car lit up his features. For one moment, I saw real hatred in his eyes, and I involuntarily flinched.
Because she's coming there to see you. If I show up alone, who knows what will happen? And because you need to be part of this. I did the first one on my own, but I need you for this. I'm not doing this alone again.
Okay, okay, I said. I knew that what he really wanted was for me to see someone die. I hadn't forgotten the haunted look in his eyes the first time I'd seen him after he shot Ted. He probably thought I couldn't handle it, but I was prepared. I was nervous about things going right, but I wasn't nervous about seeing Lily Kintner get her head bashed in. We were a little early, so Brad drifted through the empty streets of Kennewick. Along the beach, I looked out toward the ocean, a swath of it sparkling with silver moonlight. I really did like Kennewick, not to live all the time, but as a place to get away from the city. But after the estate was settled, and all of Ted's money was solely in my name, I'd sell the house along the bluff. There were better places to live. I pictured islands in the Mediterranean. I pictured palm trees and beach bars that didn't look like coolies. I'd wasted my life in New England for far too long. It was close to 10 p.m. when Brad doused the lights on his truck and turned off Micmac onto the gravel driveway of my property. He drove slowly, the truck seesawing, the driveway more rutted than ever after the recent rains. The house loomed up, looking simultaneously massive, its dark outline dwarfing the landscape, and small and fragile against the expanse of the ocean. Brad parked next to the dumpster and killed the engine. A steady wind buffeted the truck.
"She's probably already inside," Brad said. "Watching us."
"Don't waste time, okay?" I said. "Once I enter the house, then you should start to move. I don't want to be fending off a psycho bitch in there.
I'll be fast. I want this over with."
"Okay," I said. Even in the dim light of the truck's interior, I could see that Brad was trembling slightly. I pressed a hand against his prickly cheek, and he jumped as though a snake had bit him.
"Jesus," I said. "Jumpy? You scared me. I can't see a thing in this truck. You should go."
I opened the door and Brad put his hand over the cab's light. "See you in there," I said, and shut the door. The engine ticked, cooling down. I pulled the keys from my pocket and walked toward the stone front steps. The moon was behind the house, and as I got closer, the house was like a black wall with nothing beyond it. I breathed deeply, shocked by how cold the air had become. I fumbled with the keys, finding the right one, and unlocking the door, swinging it inward and stepping inside. For a moment, I had the surreal sense that I had merely passed through the facade of a house, and I was still outside. I looked up to see stars, but there was nothing there. "In here," a voice said, and Lily materialized briefly in a pool of light, then disappeared again. "Come in," she said. "Your eyes will adjust." I let the door shut behind me. The lofty ceilings of the foyer began to take shape in the gray light. I tested my voice. "Isn't this dramatic?" I said, and it echoed sharply in the house. Did Brad tell you what I wanted? Lily said. I moved toward the voice, one of my hands going instinctively to my pocket. I'd brought the small canister of pepper spray that I sometimes carried with me in the city. I told Lily I'd been surprised to hear that she wanted money. I asked her if it was to help her father, hoping that was a sensitive subject and that it would piss her off. What do you mean? She asked, her voice sounding calm, almost casual. He killed someone, right? In England? He must have legal fees. No, she said. The money is for me. I told her I couldn't get her money right away, and she told me she just wanted to meet me face to face, to hear that it wouldn't be a problem. We were about a yard away, and I wasn't planning on getting any closer. My eyes had adjusted, but Lily was still just a featureless blob. She hadn't moved since I'd come in, as though she were rooted in place. If she moved toward me, I was planning on bolting. I knew every square foot of this house, and it was an advantage I planned on using. "Were you sleeping with Ted?" I asked her. Brad would be arriving any moment, and I genuinely wanted to know. "How did you two even meet?" "We were on a flight together. He knew everything about you, you know. He knew you were cheating on him with Brad. You didn't fool him." "So why didn't you just turn me in?" I said. "If you're so sure I'm this awful person."
"I will turn you in, Faith, if you don't do everything I say." It was strange to hear my old name, and it brought me back to college, to the smoky rooms and boozy parties. Suddenly I could picture Lily's face, her cold green eyes. "Is this about Eric?" I asked, as I saw a dark figure moving toward us. Brad, coming to kill Lily. I almost wanted to make him wait a moment. I wanted to know if Lily had killed Eric in London all those years ago. I needed that.
"No," Lily said, amusement in her voice.
"It isn't. This is all about you." And then Brad was there, his face ghostly, lifting his large wrench. I watched, fascinated, then realized that both faces, Brad's and Lily's, had turned toward me. The wrench came down, a sharp pain exploding in my head. My knees buckled, and I was suddenly on the cold, sawdusty floor, a hand on my head. Brad was over me. He grasped my hand and moved it away from my head. My hat had fallen off. "I'm about to die," I thought. I heard the whistle of the wrench as Brad swung it again.
Chapter 26. Lily. Brad brought the wrench down on Miranda's head. She dropped first to her knees and then to the floor, her hat coming off. She brought a hand up, touched herself where she had been hit. For a second, I thought that Brad wasn't going to be able to finish, but he crouched and hit her several more times. Without the hat to block the blows, the wrench made sharp thunking sounds against her skull. The last time he swung it, I heard a raspy crunch. The sound of someone punching his hand through a wall. I gently pulled him away when it was clear that she was dead. When, even in the fuzzy light of the house's interior, I could see that the side of her head was caved in, and that a black pool of blood had spread out across the floor. "Leave the wrench here with her. Let's step outside for a moment," I said. Brad did as I said, laying the wrench almost gently beside Miranda's inert body. I gripped him above the elbow and led him to the front door and through it. The air outside was the same temperature as it was inside the house, but it felt cleaner, filled with the salty smell of the ocean. I let the door shut behind us. "It's done," I said to Brad.
"You think she's dead?"
he said. "Yes, she's dead,"
It's over. You did a good job. Did she suspect anything?
No. I told her everything just like you told me. She saw you, though.
What do you mean she saw me? I asked.
Last night, after you left my house, she was there. She'd come up to see me and saw you there. She recognized you.
Brad had pulled his cigarettes out of his jacket pocket and was unsuccessfully trying to extricate one from the packet. Let's sit in the truck for a moment and have a cigarette, I said. Then we can deal with the body. We got inside Brad's truck. I pulled my backpack off and held it in my lap.
You cold? Brad asked. I can turn the heater on.
No, I'm fine, but I'm going to have a drink. I unzipped my backpack and pulled out the flask of apricot brandy. Do you mind? I'm freaking out a little.
No shit, right?
Brad said, and barked out a short, unnatural-sounding laugh. I tipped the flask at my lips, but didn't drink any of its contents. You want some? I said. It's apricot brandy. It's good. He took the flask from me and took a long pull, handed it back. Have another, I said. I've had plenty tonight.
If we can't drink tonight, then I don't know,
he said, and tipped the flask again. I listened to him swallow twice. He'd drunk enough. I hoped the apricot flavor would mask what was in the brandy, and it had. I didn't know how long it would take for it to kick in, but I wanted to hear more about Miranda's visit to Brad the night before. Tell me about last night, I said. Then we'll deal with the body. Brad flicked his lighter and lit a cigarette, blowing a blue plume against the windshield.
She scared the shit out of me is what she did. You left the house and about 5 minutes later she showed up. I thought it was you returning at first.
Why was she there?
She came because she didn't want to call me on the phone. She said the police have some kind of witness and that they are going to question me and I needed to keep my shit together. We didn't talk about that much because she was so freaked out about seeing you.
And you told her what we talked about?
Yeah. I told her exactly what we planned. I said you tried to convince me to help you kill her, and that I told you I'd think about it. But that I thought we should double-cross you. I told her I'd be willing to kill you for her. She bought it.
The night before, when I'd approached Brad in the parking lot of Cooley's, my plan had been simply to get Brad to bring Miranda to the house on Micmac Road. That was step one. Once I was alone with Miranda, I knew that I could kill her, using my stun gun first, then either smother her with a plastic bag or use my knife. But when I began to talk with Brad outside Cooley's, I recognized that he was a man on the verge of breaking. In the dim light of his truck's cab, I could see that his eyes were haunted and scared. I was reminded of an animal with his leg in a trap, half-starved and desperate. I changed plans immediately, telling him that I'd known Miranda since college and I knew what she had done, and that he'd been set up all along. "She's going to turn you in, Brad. You know that, don't you?" I said to him.
I don't know, he said.
"Brad, I'm not asking you, I'm telling you. Miranda is an evil person. Is there any proof whatsoever that Miranda had anything to do with killing Ted? Besides your word, that is. All she has to do is say that you did it on your own accord. You won't be able to prove otherwise. You're going to jail for the rest of your life, and Miranda is going to get off scot-free. You've been used."
"Oh, God,"
he said, and wiped at an eye with one of his large hands. It had been that easy to get him on my side. It was clear that he had not been completely fooled by Miranda. Far from it. I told him we should go back to his house and discuss options. I followed him in my car to the rental unit where he lived. Ted had described it to me, telling me how sterile and bleak it was. And he was right. The furniture was solid but uninteresting. Magazines had been fanned across the coffee table, and the whole place smelled of cleaning products. I wondered if it was even cleaner than when Ted had seen it. Wondered if Brad, in his distress, had been compulsively straightening his apartment. We sat on the couch. I had turned down the offer of a beer, but Brad had got himself a Heineken from the tiny alcove kitchen attached to the living room. He emptied half the bottle with his first sip. "Are you in love with her?" I asked him.
"I thought so," he said. "I mean, I don't know. You've seen her. You saw her. She's going to be fucking rich."
"Yeah, she's going to be rich, but she's not going to share that with you. Trust me, this is how she operates. She gets men to do what she wants them to do, and then she eliminates them. She got you to kill her husband for her, and she got you to do it when she was 1,000 miles away." He nodded at me, his face slack. "That's the worst part," I continued. "She turned you into a murderer, and that's something that you can never reverse." "But it wasn't you, Brad. It was Miranda. She manipulated you. You never stood a chance." I watched as tears spilled in two steady streams from Brad's eyes, falling down his leathery face. I had told him what he wanted to hear. I had told him that he wasn't responsible for the murder of Ted Severson, and that Miranda was. I had absolved him. When he stopped crying, I asked him to get me a beer. I wasn't planning on drinking it, but I wanted to give him something to do, and I wanted him to feel like I was now on his side. He came back with two bottles, sat down, and uncapped the bottles with an opener that was attached to his key ring.
"What should I do?" he asked. "Should I just go to the police and confess? Tell them everything that happened?"
"That's not going to help. You're still the one who killed Ted. She was nowhere near when it happened, and she's going to say she had nothing to do with it."
"So what should I do?"
He drank his beer, dribbled a little down his chin. The way he was looking at me, I could have told him to break his own fingers and he would have done it. So I took a chance and said to him, "I need you to help me get rid of Miranda. It's what she deserves, and it's the only thing that's going to get you off the hook. Can you help me do that?"
"What do you mean, get rid of her?"
"I'm going to kill her, Brad."
"Okay."
So I presented the plan. I told him to tell Miranda that I wanted to meet with her, that I knew all about the murder, and that I wanted money. We would meet in the house the Seversons had been building, sometime the next night, after dark.
"She'll be suspicious," Brad said.
"Okay," I said. "You're right, so instead of telling her that I'm going to blackmail her, tell her that it's a setup. That I told you to tell her it was blackmail, but that I'm planning on killing her. That I've been waiting for my moment since college. She'll come. I know she will. Then I'll get rid of her and you can help me bury her body. If she gets discovered, I'll make sure that you have a solid alibi. I'll say that you and I met up here in Kennewick and we hooked up, and you came back down to my house in Massachusetts. You'll be fine, I promise."
"What about the money?"
"You're never going to see that money, Brad. Never. You're going to go to prison, and I'm offering you a way out. If Miranda's gone, then you are safe." He nodded rapidly, like he'd just been scolded.
"How are you going to kill her?"
"I'll take care of that," I said.
"I could do it,"
Brad said, and there was something new in his eyes. Not fear anymore, but hatred. Plus maybe a little bit of craziness. I wondered if he'd slept at all since killing Ted.
"What do you mean?" I asked.
"I could send her into the house, and then I could come in through the back patio entrance and sneak up on her. I have this big wrench. I could hit her over the head with it. That way you wouldn't have to do it. You don't want to know what it's like."
It was perfect. It solved my biggest problem, that if I was the one to kill Miranda, there would inevitably be some sort of forensic test that would prove a 5'8" female had dealt the deadly blow, and not a 6'2" man. "You won't need to sneak up on her," I said.
"What do you mean?"
"Tell her that you're planning on killing me because I know everything. Tell Miranda that you're going to sneak up on me and hit me with a wrench. Then, even if she hears you coming into the house, she'll think you're after me. She won't even know it's coming."
"Okay," he nodded.
"Are you sure about this?" He told me he was, and I believed him. We talked more, going over every detail of the plan. I reassured him several times that everything was going to be okay. When I left his house, I was convinced that he would do everything he had told me he would do. And he had. I had wondered, as I was standing in the dark with Miranda, whether I had been stupid, and Brad was going to kill me instead of Miranda. But at the last moment, when Brad lifted that massive wrench, I knew. I knew that I had won, and Miranda, like others before her, was going to die, and that I was going to live. With the windows of the truck rolled up and Brad smoking, the cab filled with pungent smoke. "So she was willing to kill me?" I asked Brad, needing to know.
"Yeah. Like you said she'd be. She was surprised, though. She said you guys weren't that close in college."
He rubbed at his lips with his spatulate fingers.
"How'd you know about everything? How'd you know so much about what happened with Ted? I never asked you last night."
"I met Ted Severson on a flight back from London. He told me that his wife was cheating on him with his house contractor. He watched you through binoculars from the path out along the bluff. We continued to meet. He decided he wanted to kill Miranda, and you as well. I told him I'd help." Brad took another long drag on his cigarette, but it was down to the filter. He cranked the window down and flicked the cigarette away. I heard it sputter out as it hit a puddle.
"You're shitting me," Brad said, swinging his head in my direction.
The chloral hydrate was kicking in. Brad's speech was starting to slur, and his eyes were drooping. "No, I wish I was. Ted was planning on killing Miranda, and she was planning on killing Ted, but she got there first. Well, you got there first. It's all over now, though."
"It is," he said. "It is."
His words were heavily slurred. "Is" sounded like "ish," and I could just barely understand what he was saying. His head was angled down, and he reminded me of a boxer trying to stay awake in the ring, not realizing that he's already been knocked out. He started to lean a little toward me, and I moved back in my seat, the bags of my feet rustling against the floor of the truck.
Why do you have bags on your feet?"
His words were almost complete mush, and I would never have known what he was saying, but I could see where he was looking. He fell forward, slumping sideways so that his right shoulder landed hard on my thigh. I grabbed two handfuls of his thick denim jacket and managed to move him upright in a seat. His head tipped backward, his mouth open. I unlatched my door and got out of the truck, shutting it quickly so that the light didn't stay on too long in the cab. I looked up. The night sky was filled with clustered stars, brighter now than when I had parked the car. The ocean shushed unseen. I allowed myself 10 seconds of just standing there. And then I got to work. I had brought extra bags, and I had my knife. But before resorting to either of those, I hoisted myself onto the bed of the truck to check out the toolbox that was secured with a bungee cord against the rear of the cab. The corrugated metal lid was unlocked, and I used my penlight to look inside. There were all the tools I'd expected. Hammers, handsaws,